Thank you, this is very, very fine, very fine answer this morning, thanks. In January of 2004, I departed our city of Nashua here to take a sabbatical leave, which took me to Chicago to be the minister in residence at our Unitarian Universalist Seminary there, the Meadville Lombard Theological School. Being a minister in residence is somewhat akin to a visiting faculty position, and I felt very fortunate to be able to spend some time there with those students who were preparing for the UU ministry and try to give a few heads up about what to look for when they became ministers themselves. The seminary is located in Chicago's Hyde Park section, right alongside of the University of Chicago. And I drove through the streets and the freeway to the school and to the apartment where I would be living for about 8 or 10 weeks. I kept seeing all these signs. It said Barack Obama for Senate. I had two thoughts in mind, several thoughts in mind. First of all, who is this guy? I assumed it was a guy. Wasn't 100% sure of that from looking at the name. He had this rather odd-sounding name, and I also wondered, well, which Senate is he running for? Illinois, the United States. Not only had I never heard of Mr. Obama at that point, I didn't even know that he was an African-American. If by some chance I had driven by him on my way to the seminary, and for all I know, I may have, I would not have known who he was. Several weeks after my arrival and on the night before the primary election there to choose their Senate candidates, both parties, I went out to do a little grocery shopping. I walked out of the store and a campaign volunteer came up to hand me a Vote for Obama flyer with information on it about the location of various polling places in that area. I explained that I was not a resident of Illinois and therefore would not be voting the next day. Undaunted, she said to me, well, take one of these anyway. It will make a great keepsake someday. I had a sack of groceries in each of my hands. My hands were getting very cold. I didn't want to go shifting things around to take the flyer, so as politely as I could, I declined her offer and wished her good luck and went on my way. Thought about that incident last Tuesday night after it became apparent which way the election was going. I had to wonder about that peppy, energetic young African-American woman with whom I had the most fleeting of a conversation in a Chicago grocery store parking lot. I had to wonder, did she know something even then that the rest of us didn't? Take one of these anyway, it'll make a nice keepsake someday. I'm guessing that someday has gotten here a lot quicker than even that optimistic, bright-eyed young lady could have imagined. Just what all this someday at which we have arrived will actually entail remains to be seen. I will attempt to speak to that at some later point this morning. You may have noticed I am not speaking to the topic I'd originally put in the newsletter for this month. Kind of holding out for myself the option of doing a post-election sermon if I felt moved to do so. I think I originally had planned the thing in the newsletter said I was going to do a sermon on forgiveness, so I'm just asking you to forgive me for changing my mind. That'll take care of the forgiveness sermon right there. I don't believe I have ever devoted an entire sermon to a post-election reflection, but since this has been an election like no other, I decided I would. Last Sunday, as I generally do on a Sunday before a major election, I spoke to the values that I saw as being at stake and that I would have in mind and that I was asking you to bear in mind as we chose candidates for a number of offices. I did not endorse anyone. I do this for two reasons. One, it's a matter of principle, since I don't feel it is my place to tell my congregants who they should vote for any more than I should be telling them what they should believe. And in a more practical vein, the IRS could conceivably at least take away our tax exempt status if I did so. But today I know I wouldn't fool anyone, and I'm not about to play you good and wise people for a bunch of fools by pretending to not be affected by the outcome of this presidential election. I'm delighted. My delight, I'm hasty to add, is a tempered one, And I'll speak to that when I get to the question of now what, which is the title I did choose for this sermon today. But before I go there, I would like, in something of a collage fashion, to share with you some of what has been going through my mind since about 11 p.m. last Tuesday evening, when it was apparent where things were going. Senator and now President-elect Obama has very wisely kept, as best he could anyway, the issue of race in general and his race in particular tamped down throughout the campaign. But again, it would be foolish to pretend that it wasn't there. When I looked at the often teary faces of some of Mr. Obama's African-American listeners as he spoke following his victory, I knew there was something in the hearts and the minds and the souls of those folks that I, as a white person, cannot completely and fully know, completely and fully grasp. But there are some things in my heart, mind, and soul as well that I do know about. I know I've reached the sixth decade of my life, but it still doesn't seem all that long ago. When I was a high school student, growing up in a community well south of the Mason-Dixon line, with the largest and best equipped public swimming pool was for white people only. That's in my lifetime. It didn't seem that long ago that I was jammed into a small television lounge in my seminary dormitory, where we black and white seminarians alike watched in stunned silence the unfolding news of Dr. King's assassination. And in those broadcasts, as we watched them on a small black and white TV screen, the networks, all three of them at that point, the networks kept playing a rebroadcast of Dr. King's last speech and sermon from the night before, where he said, playing off the Exodus story of Moses, "I have been to the mountaintop and I have seen the promised land. I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get there someday." They kept interspersing that clip along with the news that Dr. King had been killed. Our next president was 7 years old when Dr. King made that speech in Memphis. And as I listened to President-elect Obama play off that final speech of Dr. King's as he spoke to that huge throng of people in Chicago's Grant Park on election night, saying that we as a people will get there someday, that was when I had to take off my glasses and wipe my eyes as well. No, we have not fully arrived at the promised land of complete racial justice, peace, and reconciliation. But there's no denying that we are considerably closer to it than was the case 40 years ago. And now, a few months hence, close to the very same day that we as a nation will once again observe the birthday of Martin Luther King Jr., we will also inaugurate our first African-American president. I also, this past Tuesday, recalled a morning here in Nashua, I think it was about a year ago, because I believe it was right close to Veterans Day. I also like to speak to that. Because of my and our ongoing relationship with Harbor Homes, and you heard an announcement about that and during the earlier part of the service, because of this ongoing relationship we've had with Harbor Homes over the years, I was invited about a year ago to attend and participate in the dedication ceremony of the Buckingham House. That's the building down there on Spring Street next to the post office that Harbor Homes was able to get built and staffed for military veterans who otherwise would not have a home. The dedication ceremony was held in the Assembly Hall of St. Patrick's Church, which is down that area. It's kind of like Catty Corner across the street from Buckingham. The guest of honor was Senator John McCain. His campaign was not in too good a shape at that time, but this was not a campaign stop, and he left his stump speech behind. He kept it pretty short, told a few Army jokes, and then went on to thank Harbor Homes for what they had done for homeless vets in his area. He emphasized the need to never forget what our veterans have done for our country and of our responsibility to attend to their well-being whenever the situation may call for it. And then he got back on his campaign bus and was on his way. I was sort of listening to him, but I was mostly looking around the room, looking at the faces of the many military veterans who were there as they looked at and listened to the senator. And here again, I saw something I could recognize, while also, again, realizing I couldn't fully grasp or fully know what it was all about. I could very easily see there was a bond, a connection, which only those who've experienced the sacrifice of military service can really know and really take in. The senator was one of them, and he knew them, even if he didn't know their names, and they knew that he knew them. And that flash of insight has stayed with me. And as frustrated as I sometimes got with some of what Mr. McCain said in the intensity of his campaign, especially some of those silly socialist references, I was very moved by what he had to say on Tuesday night. And I felt I was once again seeing the same person on the television screen as I'd seen downtown here in Nashua about a year ago. Mr. McCain is a remarkable and dedicated American. We're indebted to his service. We're indebted to the service of all of our veterans. We must keep that in mind this coming Tuesday. A commentary on where this election leaves us when it comes to the interplay of faith and politics and of religion in the public square. That will require at least one full-length sermon, so this cannot be it. I would say, I think, one hard lesson that the Republican Party is that vying for the vote of white evangelicals, which of course they, like all the rest of Americans, have every right to cast and vote their values, but vying for the vote of that constituency and making that your base to the diminishment of most other political constituencies is not a particularly wise political strategy anymore. That's not my issue to deal with or resolve. Questioning the faith of one's opponent doesn't always seem to work too well either. One of the more telling Senate races in this regard was the unseating of Senator Elizabeth Dole of North Carolina after she labeled her opponent, a Presbyterian Sunday school teacher no less, as being godless. As I said last Sunday, I found it deeply disturbing that calling Mr. Obama a Muslim, incorrect as it were, as it was seen as a slur. I think Mr. Colin Powell performed a real service to this country when he pointed that out several weeks ago. In any case, it did not appear to do Mr. Obama any more harm in the end than did the absurd and shameless accusation that he palled around with terrorists. Actually, both Senators Obama and McCain quite forthrightly called themselves Christians. Remember back to the broadcast they did, that thing they did with Rick Warren back in the summer? And while neither of them really wore their faith on their sleeve, neither of them really hid it either. And I largely view this as a positive thing, in that it demonstrated that religious faith and being a person of faith, Christian or otherwise, is not the province of any one political party or candidate or political philosophy. I need more time to develop this point further, so stay tuned for another sermon on the subject. I will plan to offer it somewhere around the time of the inauguration. For now, I think I'd better speak to the title of this sermon while I still have some speaking time left. This is a place where I kind of come down from something of a high here and do a reality check with just a couple of points. My first reality check point is that we have elected a president. We have not anointed a Messiah. I say that not to take anything away from the highly momentous and historic nature of this election, but only to say, as I'm sure Mr. Obama himself would remind you, he's still a fallible human being. A few weeks ago at the Alfred E. Smith Dinner in Washington, D.C., where both candidates attend and where good-natured humor is the rule of the evening, some of you happen to catch a clip of that. Senator Obama engaged in a little self-parody when he quipped, "Contrary to what you may have been told, I was not born in a manger." It was a good line, it got a good laugh, but the quip was not without its serious angle. I do believe, wish to believe, our country is headed for better days. both domestically and the global community under an Obama presidency, but at the same time, I have few illusions about the monumental challenges that we, not just our new president, but all of us face in the immediate future, to which we'll be called one way or another to do our part. There's a broken economy to repair, a war to end, the healthcare system to be made more just and accessible, a level of security that even a number of middle-class folks are feeling threatened at this point. Any number of basic human needs that must be addressed much more fully than they have been. And we're not getting ourselves a savior. We're just going to up and fix all that ails us. Intelligent, skillful, and politically astute, as our president-elect is. I know it's a height of conceit, probably, to quote yourself, but I'll underscore this point by repeating a few lines from last Sunday's sermon, because they remain as true for me today as they did a week ago. I said then, I do not expect any one office holder, president or otherwise, to fix all that ails us. What I do look for is leadership that will call us to what Abraham Lincoln called the better angels of our nature, so that we will each and all feel we have a common stake and a common share in the well-being of this nation. Leadership is not just about getting things done, necessary as that is. It's also about getting others to believe in how they can get things done in ways that will ultimately enhance and promote the common good. I happen to believe, time of course will tell, but I happen to believe that this is the kind of leadership we have chosen. I believe the success of President-elect Barack Obama's presidency also will depend, though, as much upon how we respond to what he'll call upon us to do as it does upon what he himself will be able to accomplish. I don't doubt that there'll be times when I will be disappointed in our new president over the next 4 years. Barack Obama will be the 12th president to hold office in my lifetime. Some of them I have definitely liked better than others. Not a single one of them has completely fulfilled all my hopes, wishes, and expectations for this nation, of which I am a citizen. And that's okay. What I'm looking for in this president, above and beyond what I believe he will be able to accomplish, is a call to a renewed motivation and a renewed dedication, both on my part and on the part of many of my fellow citizens, to do my and our part when it comes to the greater fulfillment the hopes, wishes, and expectations we have for our country. This gets me to my second, final point of the morning. If I take his opinion pieces on a issue-by-issue basis, there's not much I can find to agree with when it comes to what Cal Thomas has to say. I read his columns. He kind of gives me a good excuse to vent now and then, and, you know, compose these letters to the editor in my head that I wouldn't dare send anywhere. But there's an underlying and an ongoing theme. Actually, it's more of a caution that shows up from time to time in what he writes, with which I do agree. And his caution is that persons of faith, whatever their faith may be, wherever on the spectrum of conservative to liberal it may be, persons of faith should not become, or should not be, over-reliant upon or deferential to the workings of government alone when it comes to seeing their principles and values put into practice in a larger society. Mr. Thomas, I think, gets it right on that count. When it comes to living out and advancing the principles and the purposes of our Unitarian Universalist faith, there will be any number of ways in which we will find ourselves engaging with the political order. But as we do, we should also be mindful that the workings of government and politics alone, however friendly or not we may find them at any particular time, are not the sole vehicle upon which we should rely. Just the day-to-day things that we do here in this congregation, the ways in which we extend ourselves and our resources to the larger community, the things that we do right here in this community, in this congregation, in this community, to affirm the inherent worth and dignity of all persons, to promote justice, equity, and compassion in human relations, and to honor and respect the interdependent web of life, these things remain as crucial as ever. Our commitment to these principles and values remain as crucial as ever. This would have been the case regardless of how last Tuesday's election turned out. The task of bending the moral arc of the universe towards justice, as our Unitarian forebear Theodore Parker put it, remains as much in our hands now as it always has been. I ask that we do bear that in mind in the days and years ahead as well. I'm going to finish with this. A personal highlight during this long, seemingly endless at times campaign was when I was asked to offer the invocation at a rally in community forum with then vice presidential candidate Senator Joe Biden, who's up at the Nashua Community College. This was the one, if you were watching any of the news broadcasts that came after it, this was the one where Senator Biden supposedly made the gaffe of saying that Senator Hillary Clinton would have made a better vice presidential candidate than him. As is so often the case in these kinds of situations, Mr. Biden's off-the-cuff remark, which he was prone to time, did get taken pretty well out of context. He still should have known when to have stopped this sentence at a certain point before going on with it. Because as soon as I heard him say it, I knew he was going to get whacked, which he did. But I got to tell you, the thing that really bothered me the most about that whole episode is that with all the media attention given to our now Vice President-elect's offhand remark, well, my little prayer just got completely overlooked. Just wasn't fair. Well, be that as it may, and with just some slight tweaking, I'm going to close with it for today. But while the outcome of the election was far from certain, when I offered these words at that gathering, those two are words that I hoped would have applied and been relevant however this election had turned out. I hope they continue to speak to us now. To you who are the source of all life and the spirit of life, you who are known by many names and through many faith traditions, we seek a special blessing as we choose the future we desire for ourselves, for our nation, and for this precious and fragile world that has been entrusted to us. We are called here today because of our love for this blessed and beautiful land of ours, a land made for you and me, as one of our troubadours has reminded us. May such love guide us. May we be guided as well by our sense of dedication and commitment to the unfinished work that still remains before us as we strive towards what our founders called a more perfect union, as we celebrate the freedom that makes our being here possible. May we also renew our energies for the greater attainment of liberty and justice for all. You who are the giver and sustainer of all life, remind us that the choices we make in this election season are not only about our lives, but about the lives and well-being of those with whom we share citizenship in this nation, and those with whom we share comradeship around the world. Bless and protect our nation, bless and protect our world, and grant us the wisdom we need to be responsible citizens of our nature and caring stewards of our world. So may it be. So may this be in our hearts in the days ahead. As long as I was taking the prerogative of changing my sermon title for today, I figured I would take the prerogative of changing the closing hymn as well. I'm just all over the place here. Our closing hymn is number 148, but freedom spans both east and west. Let's sing that together.